What's the best Dark-type Pokemon? Dark, as it turns out, is one of the best types in the game. And there are so many good Dark-type Pokemon that even narrowing this list down to 10 of them was actually quite challenging. This video is exciting not only because Dark is a great type and has a lot of great Pokemon, but also because it's the final best type video that I have to make. This is the last one. I've covered the best Pokemon of every type now. I've really enjoyed making these videos. I hope you've enjoyed watching them. And I mean, now at this point, you can go check the best Pokemon of your favorite type or your least favorite type or any type in between. But I guess there's really no point in delaying. Let's start talking about the best Dark-type Pokemon by talking about number 10 on our list, which is Galarian Moltres. Now, I actually agonized a bit over the 10th slot on the list. I felt like 1 through 9 were pretty clear, but there's a lot of good Dark-type Pokemon, so filling that 10th spot was pretty difficult. And the problem was, the best Pokemon for the slot depended on what criteria I was using. For example, I really considered Sableye, who is a Pokemon with not as high peaks, but has been really consistent for all of the time that it's been legal. Like, it's always usable, even though it's never, like, great. And I also considered Chiyu, which, as a spoiler, isn't on this list, because Chiyu in a vacuum is the strongest Dark-type Pokemon not on this list. However, the reason I've chosen Galarian Moltres is, for me, I really care a lot about peaks. I care about the maximum potential that a Pokemon can reach, rather than, like, the average performance. Galarian Moltres has not been a Pokemon that's ever been popular. It was only introduced in the second DLC of Sword and Shield, and it wasn't even legal in Scarlet and Violet for basically the first year. And so it's not a Pokemon that has seen a ton of play just because it hasn't been out for very long. Galarian Moltres is a Dark and Flying type Pokemon, which is pretty good. Dark and Flying they don't have like perfect synergy together, but they don't have terrible synergy either. Flying cancels out the fighting and the bug weaknesses that Dark has. And even though Dark doesn't cancel out any of Flying's weaknesses, like just having another type in your Pokemon typically makes it better. Galarian Moltres is an interesting Pokemon because it's a Pokemon where its stats are kind of across the board good, but not great. Like, it doesn't really excel at anything, and its offenses are actually a little bit lacking. Basically, at a glance, you would think it would function more as a bulky Pokemon, but there already is a good defensive Dark and Flying type Pokemon if you want a defensive Pokemon, which is Mandibuzz, who's significantly more tanky. And normally, this would kind of just mean the end for Galarian Moltres, but what's interesting about Galarian Moltres is that it has the ability Berserk, which gives it a special attack boost whenever its health drops below 50%. And they say whenever, because if you're able to heal up over 50% after dropping below 50%, you get a boost again. And so with the special attack boost factored in, Galarian Moltres actually is able to be an offensive Pokemon in the right conditions. So Galarian Moltres is this Pokemon who kind of like looks like it wants to be defensive, but then has this ability that makes it more offensive. It also has a really good signature move, which is called Fiery Wrath, which despite being called Fiery Wrath, is a dark type move. It hits both opponents. It's a decently powerful move, and it has a chance to flinch either opponent that it hits or both opponents that it hits. Flinching is really broken. This is a really good move if you're allowed to kind of spam it. But none of this in a vacuum is really the reason why Galarian Moltres was good. I think what's interesting about Galarian Moltres is, like, nothing on paper. I guess it's interesting, but if you looked at it, you wouldn't think it would necessarily be good. And in fact, I'm fairly certain that when these three birds were released, the three Kanto, you know, Galarian Kanto birds were released, the Galarian Zapdos, Articuno, and Moltres, I thought that Moltres was going to be the worst. And in the end, it actually ended up being the best. And I think what really made it so good is the fact that in the right context, it was extremely strong. So Galarian Moltres is really good during two different formats. The first was during the Players Cup 2, where we were playing a format where, like, no restricted legendary Pokemon were allowed, but a bunch of other legendary Pokemon and, like, other powerful Pokemon were allowed. Pokemon like Urshifu and kind of all the normal, like, strong legendaries, like, you know, Cresselia, Regieleki, whatever. And actually, Galarian Moltres won the Players' Cup too, and it was won by me, actually, and I used Galarian Moltres. Basically, what made Galarian Moltres strong is that I had a team built around Gigantamax Colossal. Gigantamax Colossal being an incredibly powerful Gigantamax Pokemon. However, there were certain matchups where Gigantamax Colossal was just awful. Like, it couldn't do anything into specific compositions. Mainly, it was Rain, and another thing was Sun. Like, basically, maybe it wasn't Sun. It was Rain and it was something else. I forget exactly, but I think it was Rain and Sun. And if they had, I remember especially Rain, your Colossal just, like, you couldn't get the strategy off because you would just die because it was so weak to water and because they would outspeed you even with your steam engine active. And so I had this entire team and this entire strategy built around Gigantamax Colossal. But the problem was that sometimes Gigantamax Colossal didn't work. But I already had a whole team in a place that I knew could beat pretty much everything else except for the matchups where Gigantamax Colossal was bad. And so I was thinking about Pokemon that could work and I came across Galarian Moltres. And even though Galarian Moltres traditionally is used as a supporting Pokemon, here I was able to use it as a Dynamax attacker. I gave it the Life Orb. If I brought it, I was almost always intending to Dynamax it, and I basically used Max Airstream and how strong that Max move was, the fact that that was the strongest regular Max move, plus multiplication from Life Orb and from the Berserk boost if I ever got it, to actually, like, function as this strong special attacking Dynamax Pokemon. It was really good, and it was essential in me winning the tournament, and that was, like, one time where Galarian Moltres was good, and then the second time Galarian Moltres was good was the format called Regulation G, which was the format that we started playing right before the 2024 World Championship. So there were a couple events there. So Galarian Moltres actually ended up winning a regional championship. This Galarian Moltres that ended up winning the regional relied on the move Foul Play to do damage. Foul Play being a great move for Dark-type Pokemon because it doesn't use the user's attack stat, but the target, and so it allows Pokemon that are trained to be a bit bulkier or aren't as strong to still do damage. Foul Play is especially good against really strong physical attackers, especially physical attackers that can boost their attack stat. This is Pokemon like specifically Calyrex Ice Rider in that specific format. It also works against Pokemon that with Swords Dancer that are boosting with Defiant as well, but basically the Moltres was able to rely on the fact that it was pretty tanky. It could support its team with Tailwind, it could flinch opponents with Fiery Wrath, which again, I mean, if you're faster is really, really dangerous, and then it can still do good damage against strong physical attackers with Foul Play. Overall, it's a really interesting Pokemon. I think it's a really cool Pokemon. It's not overpowered by any means, but it is still quite strong in the right context, and so because it has these two higher peaks, I put it over Pokemon like Chiyu and Sableye because, like, while they are more consistent in different ways, their peaks just aren't as high. And so Galarian Moltres takes the number 10 slot. Coming in at number 9 is one of my all-time favorite Pokemon, Scrafty. Scrafty, for those of you who don't know, is kind of like a balanced version of Incineroar. It has a lot of the same tools. It has Fake Out, it has Intimidate, it's a dark type, but it's actually, you know, balanced. It has reasonable stats, it's significantly less bulky, and its attack set isn't as high, and it also has worse typing because as a fighting dual type with Dark, it's quadruple weak to Fairy, so even relatively weak Fairy moves like Dazzling Gleam will threaten to KO Scrafty in a single hit. That being said, Scrafty is a Generation 5 Pokemon, and Incineroar is a Generation 7 Pokemon, and so, like, there was a pretty wide period where, you know, like, Incineroar wasn't around, and so Scrafty was actually pretty good. Scrafty was a core member on my first ever VGC team. I used it to win my first regional and my first national and place top 8 at the World Championships in my first season, but I've used it a ton over the years. I really like it. I think that, like, Scrafty is a Pokemon where, although it certainly can't keep up anymore nowadays, it's like that quintessential VGC supporting package, right? Like, Fake Out is so good by stopping opponents from moving for a turn, Intimidate weakening both your opponents, especially in a time where we didn't have the clear amulet item, which was most of competitive Pokemon's history, and then also being able to do decent damage with fighting typing, with Drain Punch was a big move that it would use, and Knock Off occasionally as well, or, you know, Crunch when we didn't even have access to Knock Off or before Knock Off was good. There was a time where Knock Off wasn't good, fun fact. In my first season playing back in 2011, Scrafty didn't have access to Intimidate yet. I don't believe it would get that until 2013 season. And so what that meant effectively is that you couldn't use Intimidate. And so the Scrafty that I used at my first tournaments was actually, it had the Moxie ability. Moxie being an ability where if your Pokemon ever gets a knockout, it will then get an attack. And so that format at the time was really fast and frail, and so Pokemon were, yeah, just like a lot less tanky. And so it was actually possible even for a Pokemon that's not so strong like Scrafty to actually pick up KOs. And if you ever picked up a KO, Scrafty would become very dangerous because it could then heal a ton with Drain Punch. It took advantage of its secondary fighting typing pretty well offensively. There were also some funny builds with Scrafty back in the day where it also has the Shed Skin ability, which has a chance to cure any status condition at the end of the turn. And so some people would do stuff like bulk up Scrafty and then use Rest. So they'd bulk up, make themselves very tanky, and then they would use Rest and heal back to full HP and hope that Shed Skin would cure them, which is like a funny strategy, yeah. But overall, the main set was the Intimidate Fake Out support set. I think that the Scrafty like was mostly used with Trick Room teams back in the day, but it was just such a good Pokemon that you could use it in other situations as well. It wasn't only used with Trick Room, and it saw play in many formats before Incineroar came out. Like I said, I don't think we'll be seeing much more Scrafty for a while because Incineroar, but fun fact about Scrafty is that actually its pre-evolution Scraggy was actually used this season and actually got second at a national level tournament. Scraggy is interesting because, first of all, it's also a fighting and a dark type. I had to re-record the section because I thought it was pure fighting, but no, it is a dark type, so I can mention it here legally. And it has a lot of the same supporting tools that Scrafty has. It uses Fake Out, it uses Intimidate, but it would also use Coaching, which is a really powerful move that buffs your partner, as well as Foul Play to do damage because it's not that strong on its own. And basically, the reason why it was used is because it's actually a fair bit slower than Scrafty. And there was a lot of Pokemon sitting around the speed stat of, like, in game it's 49, it's base 50 speed. This is a little technical, so bear with me. Basically, there were many Pokemon that were all sitting around the same speed range, and Scraggy is actually slower than that. And so it was able to do stuff like attack before these Pokemon inside of Trick Room, and Trick Room was very popular. It's like definitely a little bit gimmicky, but it also, I mean, it did really well. I think it's not a Pokemon that you want to just ignore, if you have a bunch of these Pokemon clustered around the speed range right above it. And so, yeah, I thought that was kind of a fun way for Scrafty to come back in spirit, if not in name. Now, I already mentioned that this is my last one of these best type videos, so I don't have any more of them that I can promise you are upcoming. However, I have some fun ideas about where to go from here, because I think that with the series complete, I now have more time to work on other series as well. And so all I will say is that if you're looking forward to some other Pokemon content similar to this, but perhaps a little bit different, you should make sure you subscribe. A lot of people watch these videos and a lot of people who watch them aren't subscribed. And I think there's a decent percentage of those people who think that they're subscribed and they aren't. Every time I say this, people are like, I thought I was subscribed and I wasn't. That's why I say it. So do me a favor, check. It takes a second. If you're already subscribed, thanks for the support. If not, you can make a decision. You know, if you think the content is worth it, if you're enjoying it, please subscribe. Otherwise, I'll see you in a future video. Anyway, let's talk about number 8 on the list, which is Yveltal. Let's start by talking about the elephant in the room, which is that obviously Yveltal is significantly better than Scrafty or Moltres, right? I mean, it's a legendary Pokemon. It's on the cover of the game. The thing you have to understand about Yveltal is that Yveltal is something called a restricted Pokemon, which is a type of legendary Pokemon that is so powerful that it is only legal in specific formats. Otherwise, it's never ever legal. And the thing about restricted Pokemon is that we have to compare them to each other because they're restricted in the sense that you can only ever use one or two on your team. So it's not like a regular Pokemon where it's, you know, competing to be one of six slots. If you're using a restricted Pokemon, it's competing to be one of two. And so we tend to judge restricted Pokemon a little bit harsher because we're not comparing them against Pokemon like Scraggy or Scrafty or, you know, Moltres. We're comparing them against Pokemon like specifically Xerneas. Yveltal is mostly marked by the fact that it is Xerneas' counterpart. It's the Y to Xerneas' X. That's a big deal because in many formats where restricted Pokemon are legal, the best restricted Pokemon is Xerneas. It actually just completely takes over the game. And Yveltal has a natural disadvantage against Xerneas because it's a dark type and it's weak to fairy. It also has a natural disadvantage because, again, Xerneas is the best restricted Pokemon, so it's just a disadvantage there, but it matches up badly as well. And so Yveltal has never been the best restricted Pokemon in a format. However, there were a couple times where Yveltal was pretty good. Yveltal's only been legal for three different formats. It's not in Scarlet and Violet, thank goodness, because if it was, then Xerneas would also be in Scarlet and Violet, and that would be a problem. So it's only been legal in three different years, 2016, 2019, and 2022. And I would say in two of those, Yveltal was actually quite decent. In 2019, I used it myself to get top four at an international level event. In 2016, it won a national level event. So it's gotten some use. And in 2022, it was pretty good as well, especially I would say it might have been stronger there than in the other formats because it was a pretty decent Dynamax attacker. Yveltal's a little bit like Galarian Moltres' big brother. It has the exact same typing, but it's pretty much better in every other way. Its ability Dark Aura gives a pretty significant damage boost to every dark type move used while it's on the field, both yours and your opponent's. And I would say this is actually a better ability in a sense than Xerneas's Fairy Aura because it's easier to fit multiple dark type Pokemon on a team than multiple fairy types. So in theory, this could actually boost your partner, whereas Xerneas's ability will basically never boost your partner because you're never stacking fairy types. Its stats are really, really good. Good restricted Pokemon basically fall into one of two categories. You have kind of blow them up restricted, which are Pokemon that are really fast and really strong or just really strong and have some other great attribute alongside them. And they basically try to overwhelm their opponent with damage. And then you have restricted Pokemon that are still strong, but are more geared towards defense than offense. And this is where Yveltal falls, where Yveltal isn't necessarily a Pokemon that's going to pick up that many one-hit KOs, but it's really hard to get off the field, and it excels at doing consistent damage every single turn. It's especially hard to get off the field because its signature move, Oblivion Wing, heals for a really large percentage of the damage that it deals. So despite not being like the strongest move in a vacuum, it can actually help keep Yveltal alive for a long time, especially if it's doing super effective damage. And it's really annoying if Yveltal sits in the field because it will often support its team with moves like Snarl, which is another great dark type move that weakens the special attack of anything that it hits. And normally Snarl isn't used to do damage, but with Dark Aura and Yveltal's like high natural special attack stat, it actually does a significant amount. Like, you can't just ignore it. Yveltal's also great at using Foul Play, and if you use moves like Foul Play and Snarl, you don't really need to worry about training yourself in your offenses because these moves don't really care about your offenses, and so you can instead focus on making Yveltal even tankier and harder to remove. Yveltal also has access to Sucker Punch, which is a great dark type move, which finishes off low HP targets. And in the past, it actually wasn't uncommon at all for Yveltal to run Protect, Snarl, Foul Play, and Sucker Punch. Three dark type moves, no coverage moves, no, not even running, you know, your broken signature move, just because Dark Aura and Yveltal's natural stats are really good to take advantage of these really good dark type moves that all have some kind of unique benefit to them. I think that if Yveltal were in Scarlet and Violet and Xerneas wasn't, I think it would very clearly be one of the best restricted Pokemon, or maybe not very clearly, but I think it would certainly be one of the best. That's my personal opinion. It's just so strong, and it matches up really well into Calyrex especially, and there are two Calyrexes, and Yveltal is pretty good into both of them, really pressures them to terrestrialize. I think it would have changed things a lot. However, again, I'm glad that it's not in the game because that would mean Xerneas is in the game too. It's pretty likely that Yveltal comes back with Pokemon Champions, in my opinion, because like our next game that we know is coming out is Legends ZA, which is set in Kalos. I'm sure we're going to get Xerneas and Yveltal back. I'm sure that most of the Pokemon from ZA will be legal in Champions, so this is speculative, but I'm pretty sure that Yveltal will come back in the not-so-far future, so if it sounds like a Pokemon that's cool to use, you probably won't have to wait that much longer. Okay, coming in at number 7 is a Pokemon that I think is going to be the biggest surprise for many of you if you haven't followed a lot of competitive Pokemon over the years. It's Krookodile. Now, Krookodile being above Yveltal might seem a little strange. Crocodile is a Pokemon that, I mean, during Scarlet and Violet has seen basically no play, despite the fact that I'm pretty sure it's in the games. But what you might be surprised to hear is that Crocodile is the first Pokemon on our list that has won the Pokemon World Championships. Not only has it won the World Championships, it also has a second place at the World Championships as well. Crocodile is a Pokemon that excels when the power level is a lot lower, which is typically right after a game releases and not as many Pokemon are legal. It's a Pokemon that really struggles to keep up against a lot of the more powerful big dogs, but it has really, like, decent stats. Like, it's relatively tanky, it's relatively fast, it's relatively strong. I wouldn't say that it's especially fast, especially tanky, or especially strong on its own, but it's good. It's like good across the board, while not great. And because of some of its other attributes, this allows it to be actually a really decent Pokemon. So the first thing about Crocodile is that it has the Intimidate ability. It's our second Intimidate Pokemon on this list thus far. Intimidate is just one of the best abilities in the game, and it's often harder to come by. The year that Crocodile won Worlds was in 2017, which was the first year of Sun and Moon after releasing. And in that format, if you wanted to use an Intimidate Pokemon, you kind of had three options. You had access to Arcanine, you had access to Gyarados, and you had access to Salamence. These were the big three. However, if you wanted a Pokemon on your team to have Intimidate and be more of a damage dealer rather than a support, it became a little bit more awkward. Arcanine is pretty much purely a support Pokemon, and even when you would run items like Choice Band, it was mostly gimmicky rather than, like, I don't know, truly a good offensive Pokemon. Gyarados could work as an offensive Pokemon, but it really required the Z move of Z Flying in order to actually do good damage and have good coverage, and you could only use that once. Otherwise, you were stuck using Earthquake, which could hit your partners, which wasn't good on many teams. And while Salamence was okay, it was also in a bit of an awkward spot, because there were faster Dragon-type Pokemon, there were faster Fairy-type Pokemon, there were faster Ice-type Pokemon. And while Salamence was okay, it didn't fit on every team, and it had some other issues that, like, made it a bit awkward to use. Crocodile was kind of in a unique spot then, because while it did have access to Intimidate, it was also better at being an offensive Pokemon. And this is in part because of its secondary typing of Ground. So the thing about Ground is that back in 2017, it was like the best or the second best offensive type, only behind Fairy, because there just weren't that many Pokemon that resisted or were immune to Ground. Back in 2017, one of the best Pokemon, if not the best Pokemon in the game, was Garchomp. There weren't very many Pokemon that could resist Ground, and so many people would just use Ground Z Garchomp and use it like a delete button. It would just do so much damage. Ground typing was also really useful because another of the top Pokemon was Tapu Koko, whose electric moves were the main threat that you had to watch out for. It was also a fairy type, but its fairy type move was Dazzling Gleam, which is just significantly weaker, and most Pokemon would survive it even if they were weak to it. So the electric moves and the, you know, clicking Volt Switch and being, it was basically like the small version of Miraidon, basically. And so you wanted a ground type on your team if possible, just to give you some way of being immune to electric type attacks, especially Electrium Z. And so Crocodile functioned because it was not only an Intimidate Pokemon, but it was also a ground type, and it could use ground typing both offensively and defensively as well. The Crocodile that won the World Championships also took advantage of being a dark type by using the move Taunt, a dark type move, which is like one of the best moves in the game, in my opinion. I could also use Crunch for coverage, Crunch just being a really consistent damage-dealing option as well. I think it is worth noting that Crocodile was not a popular pick by any means in this format. In fact, the Japanese player who won the World Championships in 2017 was maybe the only Crocodile in the event. If not the only one, one of very, very, very few. However, despite that, it was still clearly good enough to win the World Championships. And the Crocodile that got second at the World Championships back in 2011, in the first year of Black and White, I think was a similar story. It's a little bit hard to find details, but from my memory, it was kind of a similar story of Crocodile, where, I mean, it wouldn't use Z-moves because they weren't in the game yet, but it was just a consistent physical attacker with Intimidate, really, really solid Pokemon across the board. The last thing I'll say about Crocodile is that it wasn't just used as this kind of, like, strong Z-move attacker in 2017, it actually had another role that it would fill as well. And the funny thing about this role is that it was really dependent on Eevee. This is not a joke. Eevee was a legitimate strategy back in 2017 because it got access to a signature Z move, which doubled all of its stats. Doubling all of Eevee's stats isn't that big a deal because Eevee has bad stats, but the thing is, Eevee could then use the move Baton Pass to give all of these stats to another Pokemon. Crocodile was chosen because the Intimidate ability was really useful with the defense boost you were already getting, making it really difficult for any physical Pokemon to break through, and allowing Crocodile to switch in on the turn where Baton Pass went off to make sure that, like, yeah, it was able to get in without getting knocked out or without taking too much damage. But Crocodile also, as a dark type, has access to the move Power Trip, which is a move that isn't used very much because it's only meaningful when you have a lot of stat boosts. It's a move that starts out really weak and they get stronger every time one of your stats is raised. However, if you baton pass, you know, like 10 stat boosts to Crocodile, suddenly it becomes a lot scarier and it's basically going to KO any Pokemon in the game, even many Pokemon that resist it. So Crocodile actually won a regional championship using the strategy, which I think is funny. Okay, coming in at number 6 is going to be another surprise, I fear. However, it's a surprise that I think is going to be the reverse kind of surprise, where instead of being a Pokemon that you wouldn't expect to see on this list, it's a Pokemon that you would expect to see, but it's probably lower than a lot of you would expect. Because the number 6 slot on our list is Urshifu. This is probably very surprising because on my best fighting type list, Urshifu is number 1. However, Urshifu at number 1 on my fighting type list is because there are two Urshifus. one of them is water type. And the water and fighting type Urshifu is significantly better than the dark and fighting type Urshifu, at least in terms of results. Urshifu Dark has zero international level wins and zero world championship level wins, while Urshifu Water has, I don't know how many international level wins because it's a bit hard to keep track of, but I'm recording this 3 days after the most recent and final international of 2025 season, and Urshifu Rapid Strike just won another international, so I mean, it has at least one. I suspect many more. Urshifu Rapid Strike has also won Worlds twice. Urshifu Single Strike, the Dark-type Urshifu, is very good. I mean, it hits through Protect, which is a really big deal with its Unseen Fist ability, and its signature move, Wicked Blow, always lands a critical hit. However, Urshifu Dark has some challenges that Urshifu Rapid Strike doesn't. First of all, Urshifu Rapid Strike's signature move hits three times, which is a big deal because it's able to one-hit KO Pokemon regardless of the ability Sturdy or the item Focus Sash. This actually comes up a decent bit because many frail Pokemon like rely on the Focus Sash to keep them alive, such as Chenpao and Urshifu Rapid Strike can just KO ignoring the Focus Sash, which is a big deal. Urshifu Single Strike was also nerfed going into Scarlet and Violet. They lowered the power of its signature move by only 5, but because it always crits, it's actually like a 7.5 base power difference, or yeah, like close to it. And so it's a bit weaker than Urshifu Rapid Strike relative to how it was in the prior generation when it was released. I think the biggest thing that separates Urshifu Rapid Strike and Urshifu Single Strike though is the typing, and I mean specifically which Pokemon they're able to easily hit. As a fighting and dark type Pokemon, Urshifu Single Strike is not only quadruple weak to Fairy, it also has both of its attacking types resisted by Fairy. This is a pretty big deal because defensively it means that if you ever run into any kind of Fairy attack, you will go down, even again if it's a relatively weak one like Dazzling Gleam. And this pretty much means that Urshifu Single Strike has to commit to using the Focus Sash if it wants to stay alive, or it will all in on an offensive item like the Choice Band in order to, like, yeah, maximize its damage output, but it's pretty risky. Urshifu Rapid Strike, by contrast, is able to use a much wider array of items, like the one that just won this tournament the last weekend was Choice Band, Mystic Water is very popular, Safety Goggles have been used, Focus Sash, Choice Scarf, Life Orb has been used before. Like, there are a lot of good items that can fill this role, and basically Urshifu Rapid Strike is a lot more flexible, or at least feels a lot more flexible than Urshifu Single Strike. The bigger issue, though, I think is the offensive typing, where Urshifu is a Pokemon where you really want it to be picking up KOs are doing good damage. And the problem with Urshifu Single Strike is that Fairy is just so good against this combination of attacks, fighting and dark. Especially because Urshifu Single Strike is relatively frail, you really want it to be, you know, doing massive damage when you hit something. And in Scarlet and Violet, any Pokemon being able to Terrastalize means that it's actually a bit awkward. Many Pokemon that are initially weak to Urshifu Single Strike will run Terra Fairy just because it's a good defensive type. And it makes it so that the Pokemon that Urshifu Single Strike would normally counter, such as like Lunala or Ice Rider or Shadow Rider, suddenly you don't even really want to bring it to the matchup because, yeah, like, I mean, you can't really do anything. It's almost like Urshifu Single Strike is a liability. I don't want to make it seem like Urshifu Single Strike is bad, though. I mean, I'm kind of harping on the negative things here just because I feel like everybody understands how strong the positive attributes of this Pokemon are. They're really, really strong Pokemon that should be respected. I mean, I've been eliminated from the World Championships the last 2 years by it, so I certainly don't, I don't disrespect it by any means. I think it's a great Pokemon, but I want to explain why it's not higher up on the list. I could totally see a world in the future where Urshifu Single Strike is the better version of Urshifu, if there's no Terrastalization around, because I think that's ultimately what really hurts it, is the fact that so many Pokemon that are weak to dark are able to Terrastalize out of it, or weak to fighting for that matter. So personally, I'm really curious to see moving forward if there's ever a period where dark becomes the dominant there. Okay, we're into the top 5, and the 5th best Dark-type Pokemon of all time is Grimmsnarl. Grimmsnarl's a really, really, really strong Pokemon with some phenomenal results. This format in particular, it's really popped off. Grimmsnarl's just like one of the best supporting Pokemon of all time, thanks in large part to its ability, Prankster. It's funny because if you look at its stats, Grimmsnarl looks like it wants to be a more offensive Pokemon, but I mean, the ability Prankster is just so broken that people just use it as a support Pokemon that can also do damage, which is nice. The main thing that Grimmsnarl is known for is setting up Reflect and Light Screen. Reflect and Light Screen reduce physical and special damage respectively for 8 consecutive turns if you have the light clay item, 5 if you don't, and they reduce damage by a third of what it would do otherwise. And so for clicking a move one time, you basically get a 1/3 damage reduction on your opponent's Pokemon for 8 turns. It's a really, really great deal, especially if Grimmsnarl survives the turn and can set up the other screen. Fairy and Dark is also pretty decent typing because Fairy is just the best type in the game, and Dark is, yeah, also like one of the best types in the game, and so they work together nicely. Normally, the way that you would stop a Prankster Pokemon, especially a slower Prankster Pokemon like Grimmsnarl, is to use your own Prankster Pokemon with Taunt or Encore to stop it from clicking the moves that it wants to click. However, Dark-type Pokemon are immune to all Prankster-based moves, and so you can't use Taunt or Encore, even if you have, you know, your Whimsicott out in front of Grimmsnarl. You can't stop Grimmsnarl from setting up screens unless you're willing to use Fake Out, Fake and Terra Ghost. It's really hard to stop Grimmsnarl from doing what it wants to do. Grimmsnarl is also a great support Pokemon because while it will often use Reflect and Light Screen, it has a bunch of other good moves as well, such as Fake Out. Thunder Wave is a big one. Scary Face is another big one to help control the speed of the battle. It can use Parting Shot. It has so many good moves, honestly. And it also has the move Spirit Break by virtue of being a fairy secondary type. And that's pretty big because not only is the move relatively powerful. It's not the strongest move of all time, but you certainly don't want to be taking that many of them. But it always lowers the special attack stat. And so this is a move that both does decent damage and reduces your opponent's damage. And so for Grimmsnarl, like, it's really effective at shutting down Pokemon that try to set up and boost through the screens, like Pokemon like Calm Mind Terrapagos or Calm Mind Kyogre, still need to worry about Grimmsnarl even after it's set up Light Screen. Grimmsnarl tends to do better when there are restricted Pokemon around, which is a little bit funny, but it makes sense when you consider the fact that Reflect and Light Screen have more value when the Pokemon that they're keeping alive are stronger. So it's been really good in the most recent format of Scarlet and Violet's dual restricted format, but it was also really good during Sword and Shield. And actually, in that format, it had a weird quirk with Dynamax, where Grimmsnarl would often hold the Lagging Tail item, which is an item that always causes the Pokemon holding it to move last within their priority bracket. If you don't know what this means, basically, like, you know, Quick Attack, it moves before other moves. The way that that works in Pokemon is that each move has a different priority level assigned to it. Most moves are +0. Some moves like Quick Attack are +1. And if you have the Lagging Tail, then you will move last, but only move last within whatever bracket you're in. So if you're using Quick Attack and your opponent has a slower Quick Attack Pokemon, if you have the Lagging Tail, then your Quick Attack will move after their Quick Attack, but still before any moves with lower priority. Grimmsnarl is already pretty slow, so holding the Lagging Tail doesn't really hurt it because it was already going to be moving last anyway within its priority bracket, but because it is Prankster, it's still moving before most other moves. So it's able to use Reflect and Light Screen before most opponents attack. However, this Grimmsnarl with Lagging Tail would use Trick. And that was a big deal because if you tricked your opponent's Dynamax Pokemon, I mean, they weren't able to use any priority moves except for Max Guard, which didn't do any damage. And so tricking your opponent's Dynamax Pokemon would not only take away their item, it would also cause them to move last on subsequent turns. And that made them significantly easier to get rid of or to even hit with something like Spirit Break to lower their special attack. It was a really unique set that really just capitalized on the fact that Dynamax Pokemon were so powerful and so centralizing, but I think it's a really cool set, and it's something that, like, we only really saw because Dynamax existed, and so, yeah, I wanted to mention it here, especially because Grimmsnarl was one of the best Pokemon. It was used on the best team in the format, known as Rinya's Sun, and it was, like, really essential there because of the support that it provided. Grimmsnarl's support is so good that I do expect we'll be seeing more of it in the future, and I think the big question for me at the time I'm recording this is, will Grimmsnarl have a really strong finish at the World Championships? By the time you're watching this, you might already be able to go and look. In fact, you almost certainly will be able to, based on on how long these videos take to edit. But I think it's interesting because while Grimmsnarl has won a ton of regionals, it's gotten second at the World Championships, it's won an international, it's gotten second at an international, it's never won the World Championships, and I wonder if perhaps this will be the year. Okay, coming in at number 4 is the only Dark-type Pokemon from Scarlet and Violet to make it onto our list. However, that Dark-type Pokemon is a World Champion. It's Chen Pao, the Dark and Ice-type Treasure of Ruin. Chen Pao is by far one of the best Pokemon to come out of Scarlet and Violet. A big part of this has to do with how fast and strong it is. I mean, this thing is basically just Weavile on steroids. It's really fast, it's really hard, it has some really nasty moves, and its ability is very, very dangerous. It's called Sword of Ruin, and it reduces the defense stat of every other Pokemon on the field, including Chen Pao's partner, not including Chen Pao. Being able to passively lower your opponent's defense is something that has literally never happened before. We've never had the ability to do that without using a move first. And as it turns out, you can do some really mean things when you combine Sword of Ruin with another really powerful physical attacker. Chen Pao has two kind of main partners that come to my mind when I think about it, which were Terra Normal, Choice Band, Extreme Speed Dragonite, using the fact that Dragonite can't be intimidated or flinched because of its inner focus ability, and then comboing just a ton of multipliers with the very high priority move Extreme Speed to pick up KOs on many Pokemon before they can move. The other Pokemon that is associated with is Zamazenta, who, because of a quirk of the way that the stats work, doesn't receive the defense reduction when it uses Body Press as an offensive move. Like, it's not weakened by Sword of Ruin, but it does lower the opponent's defense. And because, like, Sword of Ruin doesn't lower Zamazenta's body press damage, but it will lower the target's defense stat. So basically, it functions as if it's a physical move, but Zamazenta has a defense boost every time it switches in, meaning this can do tons of damage. Chen Pao is strong on its own, though, apart from its partners. Like, just having a really fast and strong Pokemon that will often almost always hold the Focus Sash item is very dangerous because you always need two hits to knock it out unless you're using Urshifu Rapid Strike. Or maybe, like, Gear Grind Kling Klang. Is that, am I making that up, right? That's a real thing. Anyway, Chen Pao is a Pokemon that can be used in the early game to help, like, pick up big KOs or knock your opponents out of position. It can also be used in the late game to clean up low HP targets or just, yeah, like, outlast opponents or just outspeed and get big damage off against a Pokemon because it's so difficult to get rid of. Its Ice type moves also have some good utility, with Ice Spinner removing terrain, which can be really helpful in formats dominated by, you know, Miraidon or Indeedee-based psychic terrain teams or even Rillaboom. But its more dangerous move, in my opinion, is Icicle Crash, which has a whopping 30% chance to flinch, and, I mean, most people have lost games because of Icicle Crash flinching one of their targets on the key turn. Chen Pao has a number of good Dark-type moves it can use as well. It will almost always run Sucker Punch, though sometimes people will drop this for Ice Shard, which is really useful because Chen Pao's primary weakness is just that it's relatively frail. So if you ever find yourself in a situation where your opponent has speed control and you don't, such as they have Tailwind up or Trick Room is up in general, Shenpao suddenly doesn't feel as strong. This is really the best way to beat it. And Sucker Punch allows it to still move first, even in situations where it isn't like the fastest Pokemon on the field. Shenpao will typically either use Crunch or Throat Chop, which have the same base power but have different secondary effects as its other dark type move. Though sometimes people will drop one of these moves for Sacred Sword as well. The only reason that Shenpao isn't higher on our list is because the other dark type Pokemon have, well, I mean, they have better results than it, but I could see in the future if I were ever to remake these videos, putting it higher up, depending on how it does outside of Scarlet and Violet. Okay, before we get into our top three, let's talk about some honorable mentions. First of all, let's talk about Chiyu. I think a lot of people probably expected to see Chiyu on this list, and it's an incredible Pokemon. I mean, I would say in terms of its general use, it's probably been used more than all of the number seven slots and below, but it doesn't have as high peaks. It hasn't won that many regionals. It doesn't have that many great finishes at internationals or the world championships. It's never won either of them. I do tend to be harder on Pokemon on this list that are like in the current generation, which might be unfair, but also I think I want to know how they perform outside of the generation that they were initially designed for. If you think Chiyu is one of the best archetype Pokemon of all time, I do understand it. It's not on my personal list, but it's quite good. I almost put Sableye on the list as well over Moltres, but I just couldn't justify it given the results. Sableye is a great Pokemon. It's been used pretty much every time it's been legal, but it's never been exceptional. It has a couple of good finishes. It got top 8 at the World Championships in 2013. It's like not a bad Pokemon, but it is a Pokemon that you can use, and it enables certain strategies that like you can't really get very easily elsewhere, especially stuff with gravity. It's probably never going to be the best Pokemon in the format. It'll probably always be used at least a little bit. I like it. Ting Lu actually is another Pokemon that's quite strong in a vacuum. Like in terms of like just raw stats, if there were no metagame, then yeah, Ting Lu is like one of the best dark types clearly. However, it only really saw success in one format in Scarlet and Violet, so I didn't want to include it here. I've seen a little bit of success outside of that, I guess, but it's not been nearly anything as impressive as when it was maybe one of the best Pokemon in the game. I do like it personally. I think it's a cool Pokemon. I'm sure we'll see more of it in the future if it's around. But yeah, it's like not good enough for the list for me right now. Umbreon. Umbreon is a second at the World Championships and also saw some success last season as well, paired with Zacian. It's a super tanky dark type Pokemon that uses moves like Foul Play and Yawn and maybe Wish or Helping Hand or Snarl. Basically functions like a really good supporting defensive dark type Pokemon that is good in certain formats, especially formats with really strong ghost or psychic type Pokemon. I'm sure we'll see more of it going forward, but it's not good enough on the list for now. Murkrow. Murkrow is another Pokemon that I considered putting on the list, but while it has been really good at times, it's never really stuck around for long enough to justify making it onto the top 10. It does deserve its spot in the honorable mention. It's kind of similar to Lipard, actually. Lipard's another Pokemon where it has some like high peaks and it was used at certain times in the past with some success, but doesn't have as high peaks as it would need to get over like the Moltres bar. Rapid fire round, because there's a couple others I wanted to include. King Gambit and Bisharp I both wanted to talk about. Mandibuzz has a second of the World Championships. Alolan Muk is another Pokemon that was really good, but only for one format. Same thing with Alolan Persian. I can make a whole separate video just on the honorable mention, so I'm not going to go too deep here because this has already been, I think, a longer video than I meant it to be. I guess I have a lot to say about dark types, but yep, that's the honorable mention. Thanks for watching the honorable mentions. Now back to the top three. Okay, coming in at number three on our list is a two-time world champion, Hydreigon. Hydreigon is a dark and dragon type Pokemon that was the pseudo-legendary introduced in Generation 5. Generation 5 also happened to be the time before fairies existed, where dragon was the single best type in the game. That's probably part of the reason why the 2 years that Hydreigon won the world championships were both during Black and White. That being said, it's seen a ton of success outside of Black and White as well. Hydreigon hits very, very hard. It has a really high special attack stat, and also really good natural bulk. I mean, it's not like a Pokemon that you would put in your team just to tank hits, but it's a Pokemon that, given how much damage it's dealing, you're sometimes a little bit surprised at how hard it is to get rid of. As a dragon type, it has tons of great coverage moves, like Flamethrower and Earth Power, the big ones. It's hit the steel type Pokemon that, at least in Black and White, resisted both of Hydreigon's stab attacks. One of the things that I haven't talked about that much yet is that Dark is just a really good offensive type in general, because although it doesn't hit that many types for super effective damage, there also aren't that many types that actually can cleanly resist it. And so on a Pokemon as powerful as Hydreigon, again, being able to consistently click Dark Pulse into a lot of stuff is a pretty big deal. Dark Pulse is just a great move in general, especially when your Pokemon is decently fast, because if it ever picks up a flinch, it can just really swing a game. Hydreigon's interesting because while it has been used primarily as this offensive Pokemon, it also has some support capabilities as well. When it won the World Championships in 2011, it actually used Substitute, taking advantage of the fact that Dark and Dragon actually gives you a ton of good resistances, and so if you don't have the right typings on your team or on the field to hit it, it can be really difficult to get rid of. And we've also seen Hydreigon use moves like Tailwind and Snarl before as well. Now, following its debut generation in X and Y, the Fairy type was introduced, and Hydreigon became quadruple weak to Fairy. And similar to Urshifu Dark, both of its types are resisted or immune, actually, which is worse, to Fairy, so it couldn't really easily deal with Fairy-type Pokemon, and so many people thought that that would just be the end of Hydreigon, that that it wouldn't be good anymore. And although it didn't win the World Championship since the fairy type has been introduced, it's still been consistently a very good Pokemon. It was good in X and Y, it was good in Sun and Moon, it was good in Sword and Shield, and actually the beginning of Scarlet and Violet, it was still good. It's seen a decent bit of success. I actually lost to one at the Toronto Regional Championships because it was really fast, it had Snarl and Tailwind, and it really disrupted all my plans. The beginning of Scarlet and Violet was especially funny because people were using Focus Energy Scope Lens Hydreigon, with the idea being that you would always critical hit with both Focus Energy and Scope Lens, and you would use this to KO Dendozo in a single hit. This worked because critical hits not only ignore your own stat drops, so if you're at minus 2 special attack from Draco Meteor, you are just basically, you ignore those if you critical hit, and they also ignore your opponent's stat boost. So despite the fact that Hydreigon might be debuffed and Dendozo might be buffed, with a guaranteed critical hit, Hydreigon was still able to pick up a one-hit KO, which is really funny. I've already talked about Hydreigon a couple times, so I'll keep this entry short, but I think it's a really good Pokemon, and I think that, like, it will continue to do well whenever it's in early metagames, and sometimes even in later metagames as well. The number two slot in our list is Tyranitar. Now, Tyranitar has only technically won the World Championship once. However, it's been so good for so long that I think putting it below Hydreigon would be a little bit disingenuous because it's just consistently one of the best Pokemon. The main thing about Tyranitar is that it has absolutely terrible typing of Rock and Dark, giving it a ton of weaknesses, and that includes a quadruple weakness to fighting. However, Tyranitar has such incredible stats that are boosted even further by its ability Sandstream, which sets up Sandstorm. Rock-type Pokemon receive a special defense buff and sand, and so it's actually quite effective at staying alive because it's just so unbelievably tanky. Tyranitar is one of the most flexible Pokemon of all time. It's going to be a physical attacker, a special attacker, a tank, a setup sweeper, a choice bend attacker, a choice scarf attacker. It really can do it all. We've seen so many different moves and items used on it over the years. Despite being a Pokemon that was introduced in Generation 2, a Pokemon that you would certainly have expected to get power crept by now, it's still winning regionals. Still winning regionals as recently as last year, and I'm sure it will continue winning regionals in the future. Tyranitar's also funny because it kind of has no competition. If you think about Sun and Rain, like, of course you have Pokemon like Torkoal and Politoed who can set up the rain. You also have Ninetales and Pelipper. Most of the other weather conditions have kind of multiple valid setters that you can use, or at least many of them do. Sun and Rain are the main weather conditions that I associate with competitive Pokemon, where you have, like, the main ones of Torkoal and Pelipper. You'll occasionally see the other, like, kind of second string ones of Politoed and Ninetales. But then you have, like, Groudon and Kyogre, and now you have Coridon as well. But if you think about Sand, there's no second place. Like, you have Tyranitar, who's obviously number one, and then you have, like, Hippowdon and Jigalith. Like, nobody uses these Pokemon, except in 2017 when Jigalith was used a little bit, but, like, that's because Tyranitar wasn't around. Anyway, Tyranitar just has such incredible stats, such incredible move pool, not incredible typing. It's really bad. Such an incredible ability. And actually, it always seems to benefit from the signature mechanic of every generation, being Mega Evolution or Z-moves or even Terastalization. Not so much Dynamax, but I'm sure Dynamax Tyranitar probably saw a little bit, right? It's one of the best Pokemon of all time, period. I don't think I need to convince anybody that Tyranitar is good. It's certainly one of the best dark types. Probably the second best. But of course, we all know who the best dark type Pokemon is, right? I mean, you probably knew when you clicked on this video. There's no use beating around the bush. The best dark type Pokemon is Terra Dark Incineroar. Without the Terra Dark. Just Incineroar generally. Listen, it's a running joke on this channel that Incineroar is the best Pokemon of all time, and it's not exactly a well-kept secret. I actually have already talked about how good Incineroar is in this video alone. You probably don't need me to sit here and explain to you why it's so good, but in case you missed it, here's the quick version. Incredible ability, ridiculous move pool, insane typing, unbelievable stats. It's the best support Pokemon the game has ever seen, and that makes it the best Pokemon the game has ever seen. When an offensive Pokemon is the best in the game, it's somewhat easy to counter them. When you think about Xerneas' dominance, like, people would run super bulky and slow steel types with Gyro Ball, like Bronzong or Stakataka. But when a support Pokemon is really good, it's never the Pokemon doing the damage, never the Pokemon that's the focal point, it's the Pokemon enabling the other Pokemon. Ultimately, Pokemon is a game about damage, and so you need to deal with your opponent's damage in some way in order to win. Incineroar isn't doing the damage, it's just enabling it. And so part of the reason it's been able to, like, be on top for so long is because it never makes sense to hard counter, because of course if your team matches up really well into Incineroar, but you dedicate too many resources to beating it, then you won't have the ability to deal with the other Pokemon that are actually doing the damage, and therefore Incineroar will still be doing its job by making your team weaker and allowing for the actual threats to do the damage. And so Incineroar will still be doing its job, but just not by being on the field and slowing you down, but by affecting your team building and making it so that you don't have adequate answers to the actual threats. Incineroar is a 3-time world champion, and it's only been legal for 4 different world championships. Last year was the first year where Incineroar failed to win the world championship since becoming legal with Intimidate. The most messed up thing about Incineroar is the fact that they continue to buff it. There was a time where it couldn't learn Knock Off until pretty late in a generation when certain move tutors were added. In the beginning of Scarlet and Violet, it could just learn Knock Off from the get-go. Initially, when Incineroar was introduced, it had to use the move U-Turn if it wanted to switch out. Then in Generation 8, they gave it Parting Shot, which is just an upgraded version of U-Turn most of the time. In Generation 9, they gave it access to Helping Hand, which, as of the time I'm recording this, just got second at an international level event. They have tried to add counterplay to Incineroar. I think the items Clear Amulet and Covert Cloak were added in large part to help slow Incineroar down. And to their credit, it has slowed Incineroar down. There was a period in the past where Incineroar was on like 75% of teams, and it's not getting there at the moment, but you never know in the future. In my opinion, Incineroar is the best Pokemon of all time. So as a dark type, it of course had to hold the number one slot. Thank you for watching, truly. I hope you all have enjoyed watching these best Pokemon of every type videos. They've really been a lot of fun for me to make. I have some ideas of my own for future series, but if you have your ideas, feel free to leave them in the comments. And if you don't want to wait for new content, I recommend you go back and watch the very first video in the series, which is what is the best fire type Pokemon?